My left eye socket had been crushed in, and the force of that blow was so strong that my eyeball exploded into the thin plates of my orbital floor.
And when that happens, the entire cheekbone falls inward.
And then I had several skull fractures, and there were deep lacerations.
We all know what rape is. I mean, everybody knows what that is and describe it. But there's nothing like seeing something like this, the atrocity of such an act.
What's going on with my son?
Your son was involved in rape in Central Park.
Wait a second.
They saw you rape the lady.
I didn't see a lady or hit anyone.
I didn't see any lady.
Kevin.
I didn't see any lady.
I want to see my son right now, right now.
Whatever they said I did, I did.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer for CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Nora Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service.
And I'm Lisa Zambetti. I am the casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds.
And we're talking about Detective Reynolds and his statements in the 2020 episode and also in a Daily Mail article. And he says that there's plenty of evidence linking the Central Park Five physical evidence to Patricia Miley's rape and brutal attack. And let's talk about that. So he states that there's blood and hair on Richardson's sneaker. He says the blood is consistent with Patricia's, but the hair was actually ruled out later. When DNA technology had advanced, they were able to say with absolute certainty that it was not hair from Patricia. Was the blood ever tested? I don't know. But it certainly, if it was tested, it never came back positive, because if it was, then it would have been used in the civil suit and the city would have defended itself. But that wasn't done. But then let's talk about the other thing. Detective Reynolds says that there was semen found in Richardson's underwear.
Yes.
Okay.
Do we need to explain?
All right.
What
that might be?
It might be he wears his underwear for a long time. It might be nocturnal emissions. It might be other things. But it does not mean that he raped Patricia Miley. And for them to use that as proof is just outrageous. And I understand there might have been semen in other underwear, in other of these five. Maybe more an artifact of the fact that they weren't changing their underwear, or the fact that semen can stay in underwear even if washed, because of the nature of semen. But you'd be able to tell if you actually did a study of that underwear, the level of semen that you found in there. For example, when you forensically evaluate semen stains in underwear, there is a scale from 0 to 4. So it can go 0, it could go 1, 1+, 2, 2+, 3, 3+, 4. And 4 would mean an incredibly recent pure sample, very high population of sperm in the semen. I don't know what the level was, but typically after washing, that population will go down dramatically. And if in fact his underwear was collected on that night and evaluated on that night, and he had raped somebody that night and ejaculated into his underwear, then they should have found motile sperm or sperm with the tail still attached. I don't know if they found any of that, but they certainly should have gone into great detail about it. And they certainly should have determined whether or not that was a fresh stain or an old stain. And that was certainly within the technology available at the time. And I just don't know whether they did that or not.
Well, they certainly found the ejaculate that they found on Patricia Miley's shorts or her running clothes was that of her boyfriend and that of the unidentified assailant, and that was not any of the boys. So
right.
Even though they had samples of all the boys ejaculated, didn't match anything that was on her, even though some of those video confessions, the boys said that they all ejaculated on her. So clearly...
It just didn't happen. The evidence would have shown that. The fact that they didn't find any trace evidence of those boys on the victim or on the crime scene, on her shoes that were found in the thrown about, on her clothing, that is an impossibility. If you have six people actively involved in raping somebody and holding someone down, then all six of them will leave trace evidence, not just one of them. And then let's get to the other evidence. And the plastic surgeon who did surgery on Patricia's face to reconstruct it did an amazing job and obviously was qualified in every way to do that job. But Dr. Mora also opined that because there was a very clear handprint on the inner thigh, thumb and four fingers, that it must have been at least two people or not one person raping her, because one person must have held her leg open while the other one raped. That is a complete and utter fallacy. That does not prove that in any way, shape, or form. One person can leave that. If you had six hands simultaneously on her, then that's going to be proof. But one hand does not prove that. And somebody can pry her legs apart, I'm sorry for being so graphic, but then force his body in between her legs and keep it open. You no longer have to hold it open with your hands. And to say that that was proof that it was multiple offenders, clearly this doctor is speaking far outside of her area of expertise. She is not a rape expert. She's never investigated a case. She's not a forensic expert in any way. But that is the opinion that the Armstrong report relied on to say that medical evidence proves that there were multiple offenders. And that's just blatant bullshit.
Yeah, I think the lack of forensics is a major problem. And of course, we saw in When They See Us, Ava's depiction, there's a scene where we see Linda Fairstein talking about that and being disappointed when the same, first of all, that the forensics would show it was them. And then the forensics come back and nothing matches. There's a DNA profile, it's semen, but it's none of those five. And then there's the scene where you see her say, well, we have to run with it because the whole world is watching us. Now, I don't know whether that happened or not. I can't speculate on that. Yeah. The only thing I can say is that given the violent brutality in this case in particular, and the fact that five of them would have had to have spent some time with her, there would be forensics without a doubt. So it's a very, whatever it might be, whether it's hairs, whether it's blood, whether it's semen. So that's a huge red flag. Each time that Jim and I are talking, it's not just about one aspect, it's multiple. When you put the victimology together, you put the timeline together, you put the geography, then the forensics. The sad thing, I think, really in this case is that for Tricia and the medical professional who you just referenced, Jim, is that Tricia believes what that medical professional says, that there's medical evidence that it's more than one person. And that's based on that handprint, which I've seen in cases, handprints, and that's one person who's the offender. But also on the basis that because the attack was so violent and so brutal, therefore it must have been multiple people. Well, again,
oh God.
Not follow through.
No, we have seen incredibly violent serial offenders who over time can get more violent. Who this guy, Mateus Reyes, has actually given his victims a choice at times. Either I pluck your eyes out or I kill you. Your choice. That's sadistic. That's horrific. He then plucked the eyes out and killed one victim. And he's been violent, brutally violent, in all his rapes. This is consistent with that behavior. Is it consistent with the behavior of these five boys? Absolutely not. None of them had been arrested before. None of them had been called out on any violent attacks. None of them have ever been reportedly involved in any rape or any sexual assault of any kind. This case was so extreme. It looks like a very experienced offender. He didn't do what the mobs were doing. He didn't attack somebody in public and continue to attack people in public. He took the victim to a secluded area. He restrained the victim with her own clothing. and then he committed the attack, and then he tried to kill her. That is not what happened with all the other victims. They have live witnesses who say, he tried to get me. I was scared for my life. He tried to knock me off my bike. He tried to pull me off. He tried to knock me down, or he knocked this one, or they did this, or they did that. They were violent, but they did it right there. They didn't try to bring somebody to a more secure secondary location. That, to you and me, Laura, is sophistication, right? Not random act of a group of people who've never met each other before. It's just outrageous that they could make that leap and see, staring in their face, this evidence that it is a very sophisticated attack.
Very sophisticated attack by someone who knew what they were doing. And if he had incapacitated her, as he describes, so, you know, using his own words, he used her clothing, having done it multiple times to other women, no doubt. And he got even angrier with her because he was asking her about her home address, and he had the keys for her apartment, and she wasn't giving him the information he wanted. So he says that he beat her even more.
Because his motives were multiple. He did this with his other victims. He not only rapes and brutalizes, he also robs and burglarizes. And that is part of what he did. Now, of course, the police didn't know that at that time because she was in a coma for 12 days. But they tried these guys many, many months later. They had plenty of time to find out that information from her. If she remembered that and told the cops that, she was asked for her address so that he could go back to her place because he had her keys. My God, that just screams as the East Side Rapist. It is exactly what he did. He gets women when they were going into their apartments and grabs their keys and goes in and forcibly rapes them there. It's just so friggin' direct, the connection. Now, I understand this is 2020 hindsight, but they also had this information. And there's no statute of limitations on murder or attempted murder. So they didn't have to rush it. They didn't have to make the arrest within 24 hours. They didn't have to just look at this in the most general way and say, there's crimes going on here. It's probably one of them. Let's find them. You know,
do you know this detail about that? The police actually saw Reyes coming out of the park.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he ran into two undercover police officers. They were undercover driving a cab and they stopped him. He was wearing her headphones. By the way, he had just raped her. He's wearing her headphones. And they asked him, you know, did he know anything about this wilding going on in the park? And he said no. And they know him because he worked at a bodega a couple avenues over. So they recognized him as a guy from the neighborhood and they let him go.
Wow.
Yep.
So
that really is. The fact that he was wearing her headphones, Lisa, as well. Now, he, by his own admission, took her Walkman. I mean, we're referencing back in the 80s, you know, with Walkmans. But that was a detail that nobody else knew. And so that is, again, a very important aspect of the case. He understood her vulnerability and vulnerability listening to music. And, mm-hmm. I see this all the time, by the way. I'm a runner and I do see it all the time where people are wearing headphones, their music's too loud, they have no awareness of what's going on around them. Now, I'm not saying that to blame people or to, I'm just saying it as a cautionary tale, mm-hmm. that if you can't hear what's going on around you, you are vulnerable. And so. Right. For a predator like Reyes, who stalked her through the park. So again, I want to bring in stalking because this is somebody who honed his tradecraft, who knew what worked because he'd been getting away with raping probably hundreds of women, some who have never come forward, never shared what went on, but he understood her vulnerability. And when he talked about, because he'd been following her for some time, I should say as well, stalking her through the undergrowth and realizing exactly where he was going to attack her and hit her first of all over the back of the head. So a predatory stalker, and stalkers tend to operate on their own as well. They tend to be lone operators. But he talked about details of the crime that none of those boys knew anything about, even in terms of taking her sneakers off, mm-hmm. taking one at a time. And I remember seeing the press conference. I'm not sure, Lisa, which documentary it was on, but you see, I think it's one of the prosecutors out at the crime scene and one of the detectives, and the detective is holding her sneakers.
Yeah.
You know, that they were left at the scene, but he took the shoes off at different places.
Right.
And Reyes talks about that. He talks about the clothes that she was wearing, the black tights, the white top. Now, of course, her top was no longer white when, after she'd been attacked, it was covered in blood. But he knew those details. He picked up her Walkman, which was at the point where he had hit her. The Walkman came off. And he took that from the scene and went off. And now I'm learning from you for the first time, Lisa, he was listening to the music and he stopped by the police. That tells us about his confidence level, doesn't it, Jim?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is somebody who's gotten away with it many times and he knows he has to act calm, cool, and collected when he stopped by the police. But what's crazy about that encounter is that he must have, unless he took off his outer clothing, he must have had some blood evidence on him. She was brutalized, the face and head, scalp actually bleed tremendously when somebody's injured. And we know that she almost bled out completely. So he must have had something on him. And like I said, unless he took off his outer layer of clothing. Now, I know he typically attacked with a black sweatshirt and black kind of hides blood. And that might be why he did it. He may have developed that as part of his MO, because a black sweatshirt will only look wet when it's got blood on it. It won't necessarily look like red blood. And that may be what the issue is. But them asking him, do you know anything about this, about the Wilding, instead of detaining him like everybody else who got detained, who came out of that park, who they could possibly grab, that's just bad police work, just shoddy bullshit police work. And to know that they could have prevented the death of at least one more victim, the rape and murder of at least one, two, because she was pregnant at the time. They could have prevented that by actually keeping him. And I would bet my career on the fact that he had forensic evidence of that rape and murder or attempted murder on him at the time he was stopped by those cops. It's just outrageous.
So these interrogations, they're not recorded in any way, right? They're not even written down.
These are not my rules. These are the rules I was handed. And that's what we play by.
I really didn't know what. My mind just felt like scrambled eggs. I really didn't know what was going on. I just wanted to get the hell home.
Why did they not arrest him? If they were rounding up young guys, I mean...
He fit the bill.
Oh, there's even a bigger thing I don't know if you know about. The 2 days before the rape that happened 2 days before, the woman who survived said that her guy had stitches in his chin.
Right.
And so they went to nearby hospitals and they found who had had stitches in their chin and they had his name. They had right. Mateo Reyes's name and they didn't follow up and pursue him on that. I just want to say one thing about the sneakers, because it's really important that during his video confession, they got Corey Weiss to say that the jogger had been wearing a fanny pack and a Walkman. That's not the case. She had headphones on that were the sort of, they were a Walkman in the headphones, right? So she didn't need a fanny pack. And in fact, her sneaker had a little pouch on it that had her keys. So that's why Reyes had to take off her shoe and undo the laces to get the pouch, to get the keys. And only he knew that. And that's what he described.
And that Reynolds is totally inconsistent on that point. And he says that Corey Wise volunteered that there was a guy named Rudy who took her Walkman and fanny pack. And he says, Reynolds says that's something that Corey Wise volunteered without any indication from the cops, and that the cops didn't know about her Walkman at the time. Well, the fact is that's just not possible. And if what you're saying is true, that she wasn't even wearing a Walkman, because I had heard he took her Walkman, but I don't know if that was because of a miscommunication.
The vernacular. Yeah.
But if she had the headphones that contained the Walkman, and I just don't remember what year they came out. I know they used, when they came out, they were really cool. But the fact is that if that's the case, then that totally undermines almost every single thing that Detective Reynolds says that links them forensically to this crime. There is no, the fact that a guy, Richardson, who's running around in the park has grass stains on his sneakers. Does not at all implicate him. And grass stains on underwear, on his underwear. Well, I don't know if he was sagging or not, but if they're wrestling around or if he was involved in an attack of somebody else where there was blood because this guy was beaten to the ground or cut with a broken bottle, and he ends up with grass stains on his underwear, that does not mean that he was involved in a rape. And this whole thing about the semen in his underwear and the Central Park Five saying that, well, none of them actually consummated the rape. What? What do you mean? I watched that video. I watched a couple of the videos of these Central Park Five, and none of them said that. He said, oh, this one was fucking her or that one was raping her. But none of them said they never consummated the rape. That's just garbage.
We've already referenced language just on Walkman of, you know, what was meant. Is it a Walkman that's, you know, a hard case that you put the cassette in, or is it just in the vernacular? But with language, 14, 15, 16-year-old boys, the language that was in their confession statements is not language I would expect to be consistent with their vernacular. You know,
Yeah. There
were things that were said, some of the phrases about breasts and tits and that just did not seem to fit with who they were as young boys. The other thing to say that, yes, they probably all had grass stain and mud on them because admittedly they were running from the police and they were running around the park. So, I mean, it's just such a ridiculous thing to say. The other aspect just about DNA with knowing that this was an unknown profile for some time. Why, when Reyes was raping multiple women, multiple crime scenes, why did his DNA not hit with those other crimes?
I don't think...
They didn't have a database like that then.
Yeah, it was before CODIS. That was 96.
So then
they collected the samples, but they didn't... At that time, all they were doing, you could actually get a blood type from semen samples. They didn't have DNA collection at that time. It was 96 later that, excuse me. 96, I think that was, OJ time, right?
That's right.
So
why was it? He was already in the prison system, right? Would they not have taken his DNA for when he was in the prison system? Would that not have been run against?
They weren't doing it back then. It was too early. It was not till actually, I think, that wasn't done till in the 2000s that they automatically took first sex offenders and then general prisoners and put them in CODIS. But they had his profile from the rapes, right? From four of the rapes.
Yeah.
And they had the profile from the victim, Patricia. And so they could have, if they just looked at the file, they could have matched it that way, but there was no CODIS for them to run it against at that point.
Right. And that's what I was meaning. I mean, we did go back to the prison population in 1994 and swabbed. We were meant to swab most prisoners at that time, although there were some who thought DNA forensic, this would never catch on. So I would imagine that there is a gap there. But I did wonder why his DNA didn't hit, you know, when he was later arrested and he was in prison.
Right. But when you have the same detective,
the same
Michael Sheehan, the same prosecutor, Linda Fairstein, the same judge, I mean, good Lord.
That's what I became really incensed about. I literally, you know, just stopped what I was watching and I wrote down, this is fucking outrageous, you know, because your brain must do the work. You don't get handed these things on a plate. It just seemed that this case, it was handed on a plate and people didn't make the links. And then I think it may have been Eric Reynolds who turns around and says, well, the sexual offences team who dealt with rape, they had a lot of cases. And then the homicide squad, they had a lot of cases. And so the rapes were dealt with one squad and the homicide detectives obviously dealt with Trisha's case. But, I mean, yes, we're going back to 1989, but this is just so basic and on so many levels and people just were not making those links. We're not talking about two different police forces. We're talking about exactly the same area and a dangerous offender. And I'm afraid for me, what it really talks about is just the lack of priority when we're talking about violence against women and girls, because these offenders don't just wake up one day and decide to do these things. And why is it that this East Area rapist was allowed to continue for so long? I mean, how many detectives really were working that case proactively? Why weren't they understanding that those offenders, you know, and I mean through time as well, not just 1989, because we still see this problem, that offenders do escalate to rape and murder. And it has to be a priority because women are being raped and killed at such, you know, incredible rates. And yet even present day, these cases aren't getting the priority and the resources that they require.
It is unimaginable how to this day we could have something like 60,000 untested rape kits in this country. And literally, it is a matter of money, of funding. And especially now, since we have investigative genealogy, where you could actually basically find out the identity of each of those rapists if you test those kits. Why aren't they being done? Because law enforcement doesn't have the money. And how are we protecting our citizens if we leave those rape kits untested, when now we can figure out who they are and we can stop those people? Because rapists many times are serial rapists because they can get away with it for so long without getting caught. Most rape victims, male or female, generally will not report. And so that allows these offenders to get away longer, and we're helping them by not even testing the rape kits.
I was out here with a whole bunch of other reporters and cameras, and we were waiting and waiting and waiting for information, because in those early hours, there was an investigation going on behind closed doors. There was intense pressure to solve the case. This was the crime that had to be solved.
I just want to say the victim's name again, because it was actually Lourdes Gonzalez Serrano. She was raped and stabbed to death by Matias Reyes, and she was pregnant at the time. So he gouged her eyes out too. So that aspect of that sadistic behavior that is consistent across the series. And he, by his own words, he says, his own admission is that he was a monster. And he clearly was. I mean, the way he treated women. I believe he raped his own mother as well. That was in his... Mm-hmm. background. I mean, very serious, dangerous individual that was allowed to continue offending.
Yeah. If we just take a moment to think about that, when he notably has given women the choice, I will either pluck your eyes out or I will kill you, your choice. Then we see that both things happen to this woman. She may have had to make that horrible decision. Go ahead, pluck out my eyes. And then he killed her anyway. It's just so unsettling and horrible and horrific. And I'm so sorry for that victim had to go through that, and for her family members as well. It's just a terrible thing.
Her two children witnessed that.
And she was pregnant at the time.
The next generation the legacy of their mother being brutally murdered and raped in front of them. There really is this intergenerational legacy, all at the hands of one man. And then we obviously have multiple victims of the, when they see us, the boys who lose their childhood. And you can never get that time back. And he was allowed to continue his offending career while five of them languished in prison, were being further victimized. And of course, I think what, when they see us, to bring it back to Ava's depiction, what for me was done well was understanding the impact on not just the boys, but their families as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And look, I think that the way this case actually went down was that these five boys were there with a bunch of guys from their neighborhood and from around, and they went into the park, and they most likely witnessed, or some of them may have participated in some of the violent activity, or the threatening activity, or the attempted violent activity that went on in that park, in the wilding that was going on. But for me, there is no forensic evidence that has definitively tied them to a rape of Patricia Miley. There is nothing that actually tells me, as an experienced violent sex crimes FBI profiler, that this was actually the result of multiple offenders acting in concert. Is there a possibility that these Central Park Five kids, teenagers, accosted Patricia Miley and then Mateus Reyes actually came upon her, hit her over the head, dragged her into the woods and raped her, and then brutally smashed her skull and tried to kill her and left her for dead. Is that a possibility? It may be a possibility, but it's strange logic why or how that could happen. If those five didn't do anything serious to her and she was just running away, you would have thought she would have been running towards the east side. She would not have been deeper into the park. But it just makes no sense to me that Reyes would have taken an opportunity to add five people to his MO. It just makes absolutely no behavioral sense. I can't imagine that he worked in concert with those five. And to have Linda Fairstein use that as her defense, to have the detectives use that as their defense, just to me, strange credibility. It only could possibly be the case if the five accosted her and then she was free and alive and unraped. And then Mateus came upon her and she could have been yelling. I don't know. There's some, apparently one of his cellmates told the cops that he had said that she came to his attention because she was screaming, because she was being attacked by the five. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, jailhouse snitches are notoriously good for lying because they do it because they want to get some kind of lighter sentence themselves. But I have no idea what the veracity of that statement is. But again, it would only make sense if the Central Park Five did not do anything violent, causing any kind of blood or interaction, really real physical interaction with Patricia. Because if they had any kind of interaction like that, then the chances of them having forensic evidence of hers on their bodies and her having forensic evidence of them on her body would have been much greater. Since that was not the case, I cannot verify that hypothesis. And I would have to set it aside.
Well, I think the timeline, you know, is the major issue here. And I agree. I don't doubt that those boys were up to no good. I think that they probably were beating up some of the other victims that we've talked
some of them.
Some of them, yeah. And ironically, that's their alibi, that they couldn't have been in the north of the park and the south of the park at the same time. We've already discussed how big and vast that area is. So why that wasn't used as part of their alibi, I don't know. I don't think that they were just innocent bystanders. And by the way, I think a couple of the boys do say something like, you know, on tape, that they may well have been part of the gang, but they weren't participating. Actually, now in the UK, if they were present and something happened, i.e. a violent attack, we would call that criminal enterprise. That by being part of that group, they may not be the one that struck the blow, but they would be part of that group mm-hmm. and they would be arrested and prosecuted for it. But I just think from the timeline and the forensics, the two major glaring red flags, the lack of forensics and the fact they couldn't find two places at one time. And Linda Fairstein's, I'm going to quote her. She says, "I think Reyes ran with that pack of kids. He stayed longer when the others moved on. He completed the assault."
Well, then why didn't they name him? Then why didn't they name him as being there?
Exactly. And there's no evidence to suggest that is what happened. That is purely her speculation.
Exactly.
There is no forensic evidence to support that statement. That's pure speculation on her part. And I think we do need to clarify the record on that.
Right. As we have learned from Dr. Henry Lee, when you have a hypothesis, you either verify it and then strengthen it into a theory and then verify it and strengthen it into evidence, or you rule it out. And there is nothing that Linda Fairstein or Detective Reynolds or anybody else has said that actually verifies that hypothesis. On the contrary, Linda Fairstein's boss, the very experienced district attorney, Robert Morgenthau, made very specific statements like, "If I had known then what we know now, I would never have authorized indicting those five boys." That is not simply a "I don't know." It's a undermining of the evidence. So when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of New York City's Central Park jogger case from April 19th, 1989. Till next time, thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile.
If you like our podcasts, there are a few things you can do. You can take 2 minutes and go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. You can also check out all Real Crime Profile offers and promotions and our sponsors in our show notes. Another thing you can do is go to Facebook and like our Facebook page, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Real Crime Profile without the E. And one last thing, please tell your friends, family and colleagues about us and spread the Real Crime Profile word. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate all of our listeners.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107. Or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214 946 4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800 799 7233.